Please make sure you go over to YouTube, subscribe, or you can always find us on any of the podcast platforms, and that's Fostering Change.
We still have time to vote for the 100 X. Every time you go on and you actually vote, do a survey. It's not really voting. You're surveying saying, hey, I use Todd products or I use this. But guess what? Every time you do it, they actually send us money. We're almost close to the point where we can get $10,000. Can you believe that? You can vote every day, 7 times a day. I'm not kidding you. It normally takes about 30 seconds to get this done. And what a big impact that makes. That 30 seconds. Just think about it. One child every 2 minutes. We're going to be able to help so many kids by you just going in to 100X. You can go to our website. You can actually find the link. You can register. Just do it while you're sitting there, maybe before you're on Facebook or Instagram, or, you know, some of you enjoying some of the beautiful weather that we do not have here. But hey, do me a big favor. Help us out. Thanks a lot. Take care, everybody.
You know, it's so hard to believe we're here at another episode of Fostering Change. You know, the season is about coming to an end. It's our 5th season. All the time, I continuously ask myself, you know, am I going to do another season? Am I going to have another guest? And then I get amazing books and I meet amazing humans. And I think, oh my gosh, people need to know about them and they need to know about their story. Well, my next guest actually is a friend of mine. I've known her for years and I'm so excited that she's finally on our podcast. Dr. Susan Rich and I met when I actually was doing some research in reference to one of my sons who actually has fetal alcohol syndrome. You know, one of the things I love about Dr. Rich is that she has started this exclusive green care farming, which I think is something we're going to talk about. But first, let me bring her on. Dr. Rich, welcome to Fostering Change.
Thank you so much for having me. I've really been looking forward to it.
I know. I can't believe it's taken us this long to do it. Now, listen, your book, The Silence Epidemic, you know, I talk about the fact that I have a son who has fetal alcohol syndrome, but there's a lot of things that I'm reading in your book that I'm thinking, wow, I see that in one of my other kids, and I'm seeing that in one of my other kids. And you know, I want to jump right into this. And first of all, I want to know, why did you decide to write this book?
Well, it's a good question. I had been to death row in about 5 states as a result of my understanding of prenatal alcohol exposure and what can happen to people. And I'd been asked to see people who had, you know, been accused of these heinous crimes. But I got really tired of going because, you know, I know what can be done as a child psychiatrist to help the children so that they don't end up in that situation one day. And it's people recognizing their strengths as well as their challenges. And many of the people that I saw on death row, and meanwhile, I'm having my private practice, many of the people I saw on death row could have been my patients many years earlier, right? They could have been. And I saw things that could have changed for them if they had an IEP, if they had the right supports within their family, if they had people who really understood what was going on for them. So the title of the book, The Silent Epidemic, A Child Psychiatrist's Journey Beyond Death Row, I didn't physically get put on death row. I chose to go there. And I wrote the book as a way for us to really change this problem. It's a pipeline to prison issue. It's a child's rights. It's a woman's rights. It's a human rights issue. Yeah. And probably for me, you know, the book was writing itself over the years that I was getting an education. After I found out about this problem, I'd read The Broken Cord while working in the pharmaceutical industry after graduating with my undergrad. And I had graduated magna cum laude with a degree in microbiology from NC State, and nobody had ever told me about this problem. And what I was struck by, if nobody ever told me that it's the late 3rd to early 4th week post-conception, that the major problems known as fetal alcohol syndrome happen. They happen that early. And to get the face, it's as little as 4 to 5 drinks in the late third to early fourth week post-conception. This is well before most women know they're pregnant.
That and blows my mind that, you know, and as I, you know, I have friends, like I said, who, you know, they have all of a sudden 3 months in realized that they're pregnant because they still got their period. And that old myth where you don't get your period anymore if you're pregnant is not true. And so, you know, all of a sudden you've got 3 months where, you know, you have no symptoms. You don't think that you're pregnant. You don't know that you're pregnant. So you're continuing on being the adult that you can, and that's you, you're allowed to drink. So, you know, once a week you're having 3 or 4 drinks. And if you take that over a 3 month period of time, that effect that it's had on that fetus that, you know, at that time, I mean, that's really, really damaging. And I can imagine as a mother, you know, finding this out so much later. And, you know, what do we do though?
Well, yeah. So Rob, the situation is even really worse than that. So it's a consumer protection issue that the alcohol industry is not making people aware that if they're sexually active and using their product, they need to be contracepting. So it's not just the females that are having the issue, which we've blamed the women for so long, like women get blamed about so many things, when in fact, males who use epigenetically modify their sperm DNA, and it happens up to 3 months prior to conception. And these modifications that happen then are transmitted for generations. So
let me get this right, because I've heard I've actually read about this, and I've actually had talks with birth mothers who, you know, swear up and down they never had a drop of alcohol, but their child still was born with fetal alcohol syndrome. And it made me do research and realize that a child actually can get fetal alcohol syndrome from the father.
So take a step back. So when you say fetal alcohol syndrome, what you need to realize is that only accounts for 10 to 15% of affected children. And we know that the rate of affected children is about 1 in 20. So that's about 5% of the population. But if you go back, only about 10 to 15% of that 5% or 1 in 20, only 10 to 15% have what's called fetal alcohol syndrome.
Okay.
Because the syndrome itself includes the characteristic facial features, growth retardation, so at or below 10th percentile for height or weight at any point, even at birth, or let's say they only ended up being 10th percentile for height or weight when they're an adult, and they have to have the neurodevelopmental issues. But what we have in DSM-5 now and ICD-10 is we have neurodevelopmental disorder associated with prenatal alcohol exposure. And that is, and it still says prenatal, assuming that's the woman. But we don't really necessarily believe that the full fetal alcohol syndrome can happen from father's drinking, although there is some mouse research out of Texas showing that you can get facial malformations in the mouse with just the father using. And we've actually known that all the way back to the early 1900s, researching guinea pigs and fish by a guy named Dr. Charles Stockard showed in the very early 1900s that you could get changes in the way the guinea pig and fish behaved. You can get changes in how many, you know, babies were born, the kind of health of the babies based on just dosing the fathers. And if a grandfather, say five generations before, had been exposed, but no other of the, parents had been exposed, you still got changes in, let's say, the what he considered like behavior. Today, we would call it neurobehavior or neurodevelopment.
Right.
And it's really probably because of these epigenetic mechanisms that we're now finding out. So epigenetics, meaning it's a histone modification of, the proteins, the histone proteins that the DNA wraps around so that it can't unfold to be transcribed into the mRNA and then the proteins. And I know what I'm telling you is like really, oh my gosh, maybe people's eyes will glaze over. Yeah. But what you have to appreciate is that these are changes that are put in place up to 3 months prior to conception in the sperm. So the sperm are affected because it takes 3 months for them to develop. Mm-hmm. And so the changes, the choices the father makes, not just the mother. See, the mothers have been blamed. And I'm not saying that women should drink because they shouldn't. But now we also have all this marijuana that's being legal. Nobody's posting. Like Maryland is one of nine states that do not require you to post where alcohol is sold. We're only one of nine states that if you're pregnant, you should avoid alcohol. Well, the truth is based on it being, early pregnancy, and most people don't even know they're pregnant, we should have signs saying if you're pregnant or planning to be, you should avoid alcohol and you should contracept.
Right.
If you use alcohol.
It blows my mind that we know about this. First of all, understanding that 80% of our death row inmates were from foster care. So we know the percentage of kids in foster care who have all of these disorders, all of this, genetic mapping that you're talking about. It's generation after generation after generation. We know this. We know that by someone taking alcohol, I don't understand. I mean, we can invest in building a big ass warship, excuse my language, and all of you who are going to send me emails about, Rob, we need those ships. No, we need to educate our public. If we could save one child, just right. One child, doesn't that mean that we are making a difference? When we got Makai, they told us that, he was never going to talk. First he was diagnosed as autistic and, we knew that wasn't the case. And there were so many things about him, the facial features, and so finally, when we were able to really do some genetic testing and found out that, that they did diagnose him with fetal alcohol, immediately we started researching and finding out that kids who do have any of these disorders, if they're raised around farm animals and water, it truly does a different. And I'm not kidding you. I mean, I have a son who is 17 years old now. He is the president of his school. He has already gotten college acceptance. He is, calm and has, prior to us moving to our farm, we couldn't even go in public with our son because he had these huge tantrums and, he has sensory disorders. So he's all, so tell me about this exclusive Green Care Farming, because I, from what I'm reading and what I've read and the fact that I've known you, Dr. Rich, you truly do believe that as well.
Yes. Well, I just recently wrote an article and I'll be speaking about this in Abu Dhabi later in April. It's trauma-informed farm animal assisted psychotherapy and green care farming for neurodiverse conditions. And it's really based on, say, sensory desensitization. It's based on seeing how they relate to the animals. it's also some of the sounds and the sensory inputs that in a calm environment, the child is able to have these experiences, which are unique to their daily life, and be able to stay calm during it. And as I work with the children individually, because we do have groups and we have group experiences with civic organizations that come in, I can observe the child and I can see where their inhibition causes problems. And I can see how their sensory overload causes problems for them in their daily life. Whereas if I were just sitting across the office from them, I can't see that. So it's a little bit like an OT, an occupational therapist, or, you know, someone who's assessing all of their systems all at the same time. So their hesitation, you know, to certain of these experiences, you know, you can observe that, and then you can help better in all of these ways and not just give them a pill. So now, having said that, I did talk about and write about the farm in the very back of the book, but the book came out in 2016,
right,
the year I bought my farm. So it was in that stage that I really was growing this idea of green care farming. And it's separate from farm animal assisted psychotherapy. Farm animal assisted psychotherapy is a lot like equine therapy. If you know that a horse can
right,
pick up a person's heartbeat from 4 feet away, and horses give off this very lovely vibe. And the horses, like we have a horse here, Kingston, who's an Irish draft horse. He's really big and he's gentle. He's so gentle. And we have two ponies that live with him. They're his emotional support animals. But I've hand raised 15 goats, and we actually have rescued a couple, but well, actually we've rescued a number of males that would have been slaughtered, kind of like the roosters that people have to get rid of. And we now have 9 roosters. But if you can imagine,
which, by the way, everybody, Dr. Rich has one of my roosters. So, you know, if you always hear about that, you know, this is my friend who she has one of our roosters.
Yeah, I went over there and picked him up when you got the call from the county, right? That a neighbor had complained. And this is a typical reason that we get calls about roosters. But we had gotten a call from another sanctuary last summer, you know, about a little baby goat that would have, you know, been sent to slaughter, who was a male. A lot of our males are, you know, from these situations. And he was cryptorchid, which means his little testes didn't descend. They didn't know at the dairy he had an umbilical infection, but he wasn't thriving. He was born about a month later than the other goats. And so my kids went to pick him up on the side of the highway at a rest stop because this guy had gotten him out of the dairy, right? And had brought him. I took him up to the University of Pennsylvania Vet School. Actually, my kids did. And they were able to identify the issues that he had. We got him surgery in the fall. He had to be treated like 5 times for parasites, intestinal parasites. And we're still struggling with that. So he stays in the barnyard and lives with the emus for the most part, because if I introduce him with the big herd, first of all, he's too small still. And he, you know, is carrying these parasites that he got from where he was living. So, well, how does this help children? You know, there's some studies on how this does help, and it's parent-child bonding, believe it or not. You wouldn't even think of that. But in certain countries where the access to mental health isn't a lot, they'll take mothers who are, say, depressed and take them to the farm with the children. And so that's one way of doing it. My way of doing it is I use two different approaches. One is individual, that's
right,
working with me and the animals where they're interacting, they're maybe feeding the chickens with their hand, which a lot of these kids have sensory inputs, you know, a lot of sensory overload. And you know, it just gets you them used to like listening to the chickens, you know, clucking and the roosters screaming. And of course we have 9 roosters. So you're going to hear a rooster go off, and they're not, they don't just go off at daylight. Okay?
No. And that's what people don't understand, you know, is that they go off any time of the day.
I know. And so that's why your neighbors were complaining about, we call him Einstein, because he's got that, you know, lovely flock of hair, you know, that frock of hair or whatever. It's not really hair, it's feathers, but it does look like Einstein's feathers. Do you remember that guy?
It truly does. It's you know, and we have a couple other. So, you know, Dr. Rich, as we're ending this, one of the things I'd like to really let our viewers and listeners know, how can they help? I mean, I'm assuming funding is something that's really difficult, having a nonprofit, having, you know, really trying to get the state and the counties and people to understand how important this is. Because, by the way, I know how important it is. You know, I just got back from vacation with my kids and my son was fishing, and the captain said to my son, you know, you're a fish whisperer, you know, because he was just collecting fish after fish. And I said to the captain, I said, that is so crazy. When Makai was 7 or 8 years old and we were on the Ellen show, Ellen nicknamed him the chicken whisperer because he always had a chicken under his arm, and it could normally be a rooster and he didn't have an issue with that. So how can our viewers and listeners, how, besides going out and buying your book, which, by the way, everybody, it's A Silent Epidemic, A Child Psychiatrist's Journey Beyond Death Row. Besides buying your book, how can they help?
Well, we have a website, which is dreamcatchermeadows.org. And there's a link on there for donating. There's pictures of our animals. We're, you know, redoing, you know, as we go, we're adding in a lot of things. You can see our posts on Facebook, which it's facebook.com and then / the Dreamcatcher Farm, but we're Dreamcatcher Meadows. So, and then we have an Instagram where I post a lot of reels, but by clicking on one of those donate buttons on the dreamcatchermeadows.org website, you'll be able to contribute. The tricky part about that is Stripe always takes out a little bit of.
Of course. I tell people all the time, write a check. Mail a check like in the olden days.
That's because, the better way.
You know, that is the best way to donate. Listen, yes. Dr. Rich, I can't thank you enough. I'm going to definitely have you back on. We're going to do some more talking. Listen up, everybody. You know, I say this quite often. Change is made when we educate ourselves. And the fact is we do not educate ourselves if we do not know. And after listening to this episode, so many of us should walk away with a little bit of that I know now. And understanding, as you're talking to your local politicians, and we all know that this is a voting year for so many of us, why are we not making the changes? Really ask the question is why in the state of Maryland, for example, my home, where I was just able to get a bill passed to no longer allow trash bags, why are we not passing bills where there are signs being hung within our liquor stores, with any area that's selling any type of substance? And that means also marijuana, now that it's legal within our state, to let people and educate people to know that if they choose to make those choices to use any of these products, that they also understand that they have to realize there are consequences. There are consequences. And I'm not saying you don't do it. I'm just saying make sure you protect yourself, because when you protect yourself, you're protecting our future. And why? Because that's our future you are carrying. Everybody, this is once again another amazing episode of Fostering Change. Dr. Rich, I thank you so much. And I hope each and every one of you go out and continue to lead by example. Take care, everyone.